have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, back with a special after show, post show, part two with my good friend Elliot Holland. Elliot, how are you? How are you doing today as we rejoin and re-record?
I am having fun. I'm genuinely in a good place and excited for 2026.
That's awesome. Now, for a long time listener to the show, if you've been following this, you know that generally the after show is what I joke about. I got this from a podcast master friend years ago. You know, when the lights turn off and the camera turns off, the real conversation starts to happen. Normally, what we do is we record the main episode, hit pause, take a break, refresh, unpause, record, all in one setting. No wardrobe changes, so it doesn't, you know, it's all the same thing. In this case here, Elliot is a busy guy. We recorded the first one. We used up the time so much that it was like, we need to reconvene for part two. And here we are actually a few weeks later, different location for Elliot. He's on the move making deals happen. And we're going to make this happen. It's the nice thing about the internet and technology. Like, it doesn't really matter where you are or where I am, right? So let's go into this. So the standard questions, and we'll see where this goes, because anyone checked out part one, again, make sure you check out part one. All of Elliot's links will be in the show notes for this one as well, and the link for the first episode. But Elliot is basically fighting to protect buyers and helping them make wise decisions on what they buy. So make sure to check out the first one. But like in our catch up before we hit record, I'm just really having this like superhero vibe feeling with you right now. And in general, because you're really trying to help the buyers out there from falling for buying a bad business and basically ruining their whole financial well-being, their future generational wealth and all of the stuff that they're investing into a business. And so your answers, I know, are going to be kind of all over the place, maybe a little pro buy broker, a little anti-broker, you know, nobody likes bad business people anyway. First question is, what will brokers, business brokers need to do to survive and or thrive in the year 2030?
You know, I think that as much as buyers are using technology, let's just call it ChatGPT for simplicity, but sort of AI broadly, as many buyers are using it to process their confidential information memorandums and come up with letters of intent, I think for brokers to crush it going into 2030, they're going to need to put the same information through ChatGPT to figure out what the risks are being, you know, listed as, what are the upside, What would somebody, a reasonable person, believe in this confidential information memorandum? What would they not believe? And so I think technology from that perspective is going to need to be embraced, because otherwise the first 30 to 50 questions will have been known questions they could have fielded before they had any live QAs with buyers, and people who get it beforehand will do far better than ones who won't. The other thing is that right now, I think brokers are generally just dealing with more buyer inbound than they have time and energy to process. And they're, I think, processing it using like a mental, who do I have time for? You know, at my desk for a half hour this afternoon, I'll do two calls during that time. I bet that some of the brokers who are able to systemize who they want to speak to even better if it's on a per deal basis and prioritize better those who should get a call or attention versus those who shouldn't, based on more than just the happenstance of when they call and what they say, I think we'll do better in 2030. That was a mouthful, but I think using AI the same way the buyers are, frankly.
Yeah. Well, which is interesting, because generally the second question is, what's the number one tech shift coming to M&A? And obviously AI is the common theme that a lot of people bring up. And you did in that first part of like handling it and dealing with information repetitiveness, and then obviously, you know, the fact that this is a, I wouldn't say it's a buyer's market, but it's a buyer flooded demand side. Like there's a lot more buyers than there are inventory. What is your take? Because again, you have a unique perspective because you're not a broker and you're more on the side for the buyers, although you do sometimes get called in from the sellers so they can prepare all their, you know, QOE and just basically be actually ready for selling it and having things ready. Is what about the brokers who use CRMs, like especially broker specific, deal specific CRMs with automation, where like every inquiry that comes in immediately gets like an NDA, and it's like it's this mass responding and processing, and where that might be good for saving time, might be bad because too many people get through that shouldn't.
You know, Jason, I'm going to keep it real, man, because it hits both buyers and sellers, brokers and buyers the same. We're coming up on this kind of term called AI slop. And I think it's the same as automation slop. Mm. It's like, hey, I want to mass produce my barbecue ribs. They'll taste amazing. No, they're probably going to suck and never be great and be repeatedly terrible. And the people who you want cooking your ribs or that old dude, that old uncle is going to sit out in the backyard for 24 hours ahead of the Super Bowl. And he had this brine process and this sauce process and this order. You don't touch him. He'll be drunk for 24 hours cooking the best ribs you ever tasted in your life. I think if I piggyback on what I just said, I think buyers using automation are going to be increasingly called out and are going to feel the pain of that. I think brokers who continue to lose automation for CRMs, outreach, and I was even going to go social media marketing, because I almost think if I was a broker today, I would probably be leveraging social to curate lists of more qualified buyers that met a higher standard so I could deal with fewer people. But if you do things completely automated, you will lose control of quality.
Yeah.
And so I think that on the buyer side, you know, my clients on the broker side, there's going to have to be a, what is the ideal outcome in 2026 that ain't what it was in 2021, 5 years ago, probably not even what it was in 2023, 3 years ago. What is the ideal outcome? How do you describe it in English language? And then how do you manifest it through technology? Because you're right. I can send automated NDAs. What the heck does that do? So 1,500 people hit me up about a deal. I got 1,500 NDAs out. They automatically signed them and sent them back because they got the same technology I got, right? And now you still have 1,500 people to sift through, you big dummy. Maybe... maybe evaluate the people using some logic at the pre-NDA phase. And some people get NDAs, some get buyer profiles to support their, you know, financeability. Some get questions like, why the heck are you looking at this? Are you looking at everything under the sun? And I think when people dial in at that level, you'll start seeing change. Because what does a broker want? The same thing a buyer wants, frankly, right? If a broker could put a deal on the internet and only get the top 1% of buyers for that deal, they'd be ecstatic. If a buyer could go out and look at the hundreds of thousands of deals and only and be filtered somehow to just look at the top 1% of deals for them, they'd be ecstatic. So actually, both good brokers and good buyers want to meet each other. How is technology leveraged to allow that to happen more efficiently, knowing that buyers probably want to talk to the top 3% and only execute the top 1%? And I bet you brokers kind of feel the same way. I want the top 3% of buyers, but I'm only going to let the top 1% through past indication of interest. But we still have similar needs and desires. How do we get there?
And I love that. I've heard of AI slop, as most people have by now. I've never heard of the term automation slop, which I think you might have just coined, which I love. I think it's perfect because I feel that same way where there's value to automation to a certain point, and then you still have to have the human element if you want quality results. I love your barbecue example, right? Because, you know, that happens to a lot of businesses where, like, especially barbecue, where it's like it's in a shack or it's in somebody's trailer that they tow around and it's amazing. And then it goes into a restaurant and then the restaurant has multiple locations and it's just not the same as that dude walking around with the hot sauce in a pan, you know, in a pot and giving it to people, which is a place that's right. When I lived in Washington State, it was like that. The guy just walked around and he wanted the hot sauce. He had it and he had been making the ribs all day. But same thing with this, right? Like where automation with outreach, with marketing, with responses, like there's a way to use the tool. And then there's where all of a sudden you're missing the point, which I love is what you with in what you said, which is what is the goal and what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to accomplish just scaling things that shouldn't be scaled and then you end up with more of the thing? Or, you know, what's the final result you're getting to? So I love that. I think that's huge. Hopefully, you know, people will take that and understand which part is a good tool. And then, you know, just think of anything with cooking, right? Like what parts can you automate or scale or do quickly? And then one parts, you know, you do by hand.
If we double click on this, there's this great debate of like, Jason, you email me about the podcast, for instance, right? Do we use your link or my link? Who's the big busy one? Who's lucky to get on the schedule? Just that simplicity of automation, right? Well, if I'm an exclusive buyer and I get a boilerplate NDA thing, what you just told me is you're sending the same thing to everybody. I know there's a lot of everybody's. I'm less interested in you too.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas if I own 10 HVAC businesses and you're selling an HVAC business and your message is clearly at least focused on HVAC people, but maybe HVAC people and people who have bought more than 3 businesses, like, hey, you're the first level in this process. You're going to get a week ahead of everybody else to offer on this, but I'm going to expect your best offer because this is the round where all the real buyers and shot callers are here. Why don't you send your best offer in 48 hours? You don't need 2 weeks. And here we go. That's a way better tailored message than, hey, attached is the NDA. Send it back. We'll provide info. You know, if you focus stuff, you can win. I think about how I built this, a great podcast. One of the first ones in the series is about Airbnb. And Airbnb, that episode, they talk about the founders wanted to create like a 15 out of 10 star experience. Like, you know, 10 stars, like your favorite restaurant, steaks cooked the way you like it, the vegetables are good, service is great, cool. 15 out of 10 is like Mick Jagger picks you up from the airport in a limousine with your favorite band, and there's unlimited like food and soft drinks and candy, and there's cheerleaders outside when you arrive, and they've got your 2-3 best friends already in the unit before you get there. It's something that doesn't scale. But if you're able to deliver that when you want to, if you're able to, in some ways, deliver it to people who deserve it, and if you have a mind for, if you deliver it and your competitors don't even care about it because they're just trying to get to 8 out of 10, you'll kick everybody's ass.
I think that's important. There's two things that come to mind is, I know I heard Gary Vee say it years ago. It might be, you know, others might have said it, is that, you know, you got to focus on scaling the unscalable, right? Like one of the big things, you know, you'll hear is like, well, you send handwritten notes. You can't scale that. You could try to pay somebody to do printing or get a machine and print the handwriting thing, but you can always tell. You can always tell when there's something that's like it's handwritten or it's printed like it should be handwritten. And so how do you scale the unscalable? Right. What can you do to put in the pieces so that the part that's unscalable that you do, the phone call, the voice note, the handwritten message, like then that's what's left for you to do. And then how do you just figure out a way to scale that unscalable thing? And then I think it's so important because the other part that you talked about, like the top tier buyer or the company that owns 10 HVACs already and they're trying to buy more, is it's just human behavior right now where people expect and want personalization and customization. So it used to be like, it just should be personalized, like have my name in there, right? In this email or whatever. Right. Like, okay, if it's right. if it just says, hey, right? Like, yeah, at least mail merge and make it personal. And then the even though people complain about it and say it's creepy and they don't like it, your phone's listening to you, is that then it ends up with your feed, whatever platform you're on, giving you customized things to show you based on your preferences and the stuff that it's listening to you say or that you're searching for, right? And so what that means is, because humans are self-centered and we want everything about ourselves, is that people want personalized and customized. So it's got to be with, to me, yes, about me, or regarding me. And so yes, that's where that automation slop is. You have to be yes, very careful, because if you automate the whole thing, you can't personalize and customize it to an individual. So where do you have this part that's personal, this part that's customized? And then what game are you playing at scale? Does your audience care that it's not customized or personalized? Or does it really matter and all the chips are on the line and like this is important and worth it, to your point, right? Like a top tier buyer to personalize, customize over the top. If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business. To personalize, customize over the top, right? And where it's quality over quantity, right? And it's, you know,
and I'll tell you in my sales process. So if I really am honest about the respect I have to give my customers, and we were talking about this before the show, I got a Stanford Business School alum, crazy, wicked smart. I got a Wharton alum. These are top five business schools, right? Who's run technology companies for 15 years. And when I get them into my funnel, they may hit the same need diligence now button, right? But 40 people may hit that each month. But I still go search, who are these people, right? Mm-hmm. And these super smart people get specific outreaches, as do people who are industry experts or people who have something about them that makes them fit really like good into my funnel. So I got all the CRM and all the automation that all you guys have, I promise you. But when someone comes in that is of esteem, and I know my competitors are gonna send an automated email out of their HubSpot because they hit a HubSpot form and send an automated, here's Elliot's process and here's the proposal, bull swing, right? I'm gonna call the joker and say, hey man, you're brilliant. So you got all the choices in the world on QOE. There's some great reasons why you should choose me and some great reasons why you shouldn't. If you tell me what your top three reasons for choosing the QOE provider are, I'll send you an email with whether we fit or not based on that and a proposal. So I cut through all the bull swing. I can't assume the person reads it. I can't assume they care. I'll tell you, I know they read it and they care. Because I get responses even when their criteria means they shouldn't use me. Those emails get such a high response rate. Now I ship the email, call, text because of the timeline of my stuff. Like if you sign a letter of intent today, I know you need to pick a QOE provider within a week, so I can sometimes communicate with urgency without pissing people off. But I get such a high return rate. It's like, guys, some of this stuff that doesn't scale in number scales in net value of what I want, right? Mm-hmm. What do I want? The best X customers a year. So if this activity is going to get, if this activity that takes 2 hours a month, right, gets me 70% of the customers I need for a year, does it matter that I only do it five times a month? Or is it more important that I know which five times to do it and how to do it?
Yeah.
What am I scaling? Yeah. Right? How many sellers does a broker need each year? Right? And maybe they need three times the amount of buyers. buyers for each seller. So if you need 5 sellers a year and you need 15 buyers to create a market, so 3 for each, you got about 15 people if you're really efficient.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts, and in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in 4 ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation. I love it. I think that's great. And again, it all comes down to what game you're playing, what you're trying to play. And then something you said, not totally in passing, but it was really quick, which is what's the outcome you're trying to achieve, which, you know, looking at the numbers of what somebody wants in their business, but like ultimately what are you trying to achieve as a broker, as a buyer, whatever that might be. Shifting to the next question on the list. I'll give you both of them. The next one and then the follow-up is, what was the biggest lesson you learned from last year, 2025? So recording this beginning of 2026. So biggest lesson from last year, and then the thing that you're most excited about in this year.
Biggest lesson. This is a great question because I think I'm still compiling some of this stuff because the end of the year moved so quick. I didn't get a chance to do like my year-end planning and synopsis stuff. Your marketing should be so provocative that it pisses off the vast majority of people who you prefer that they go away. Not because you don't love them. I love them all. But because the people who are going to hire you that you can deliver the most value to are going to both appreciate your like quantitative skills and who you are. They're going to like the broker and podcast stuff Jason does, but they're gonna like Jason's personality specifically. So give it to them, unfiltered, as best as you can. Now, I can't speak on LinkedIn the same way I would at the watering hole on the weekend watching college football, okay? But I can certainly let you know who Elliot is, both professionally and personality-wise, because some of the work I do is helping advise people through a very, just like brokers, a very sequence negotiation specific process. You need to know how I communicate at both levels, right? The highfalutin Harvard language, and then the, hey, get the gosh darn data in 24 hours or I'm killing the deal language, and you need both. So I think my biggest lesson was give them the real you. Back to this automation slop crap, like you're gonna know who I am long before you get on the phone with me. And I understand if you don't like it, I still love you. But the customers who embody it are the ones I can deliver the most value for. So it's back to that broker buyer match I talked about earlier. Yeah. It's just as important for my customers to see the signal as it is for me to give it. What am I most excited for in 2026? I think a lot of the biggest hurdles that I had to educate the market on around how many fake gurus and how often I think Harvard and Stanford got the self-funded search game wrong. And I felt weird about saying it because those institutions, one I went to, are very powerful, but they also make mistakes. I think a lot of that stuff is in the market in a way where I can say it as a test, like, hey, Jason, you know Harvard messed up on the way they market and discuss self-funded search. And somebody would be like, yeah, you know, you're right. And now I can have a full conversation about what's accurate for a half hour versus like last year and the year before, I'd have to have a half hour conversation. Like, how dare you call some great institution or some book less than accurate? And so I think it's enabling me to both screen people who are really dialed in on what's right versus what's popular, but then also for those who already kind of see it, have these level 2 or level 3 conversations that, again, in the context of professional value in M&A, add more value to the process.
Yeah, I think that's huge, especially for what you do, where you don't you're not fighting against the ignorance at the same level, probably in the previous years, right? The ignorance being like people just don't know, they're not aware. Like there's some education, there's some awareness. And so there's already a step or two down the path. And then you can just pick up that momentum in those conversations. I can only imagine what how hard it's been because you've had to basically fight. And you know, whenever there's I'm just thinking of like a scientist or a philosopher just like trying to get people to understand some point of view, and everyone's been stuck in this one way. And then eventually, you know, you look back on it like, oh yeah, of course that was obvious, right? Like I feel like you're in that moment where this year will be easier for you and then the following year will be easier.
2023, I got on a podcast and said that half the deals that were in my funnel were fraud. And the podcast was sponsored by some lawyers, and the legal definition of how you prosecute fraud is different than the Webster's definition dictionary. As a buyer, I'm using the Webster's definition dictionary. So they questioned me and kind of called BS, and I gave them three examples that were so obviously fraud.
Right.
That they had experienced that they had to shut up and be like, yeah, that's fraud. Jeez, it's happening that much. And people were too scared to say the word fraud and lie in 2023. And I remember I said, F this, you know what? Like, I don't have time to spend 3 minutes using nice language to say the word lie. I don't have time on social to spend 3 to 10 minutes describing fraud. And now everybody's using it.
Yeah.
But I was using it back in 2023. I had to be bold enough to say it, back it up, defend it, be called crazy. You're just trying to fear monger. All right. Well, everybody's saying it now, right? So it's I think important as we consider who are the market leading minds in almost any industry, right? They are the ones that are going to get to the answer, the messages, the nomenclature quickest, which means when they deliver it, it's not going to be the way you're used to hearing it. But that's actually the signal they know what the F they're talking about.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's somewhat too about in any industry, in any situation, who are the loudest voices that people are listening to, going back to what we talked about a lot in the first episode. And you talk a lot about online, which is the, you know, the fake gurus, the bad gurus out there who are, you know, getting the people. And so where is those loud voices saying one thing? And then where is the, you know, the evidence of the information kind of countering that? And where's that wave? Because usually when whoever says something first wins. And then there's that kind of like switch of like, okay, what's the actual information and where's the
balance?
That's
a fair point too.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing you're up against too on your side, because you're a smart, brilliant guy with a ton of experience, but not the loud showman marketer out there, you know, doing guru things. Which is good. I appreciate that about you.
You know, it's kind of funny, man. Like that used to frustrate me to no end. And it frustrated a lot of my friends that kind of grew up in the investing business, like with the best investors in the world, right? Calling Wall Street, calling Main Street, whoever they were. A lot of my friends were fortunate enough to work for them. It's like these people just have a big old loudspeaker online. And so they get to speak this baloney at millions of people and you get mad. And then you start realizing nobody who really wanted to get a deal done would sit in an audience of a million people listening to somebody who is lying about their background. Not a real person.
No.
So then they actually kind of help to filter out the wannabes, the folks just grunting with their day job that probably ain't never gonna get a deal done, that are probably just gonna pay for some courses and get out of the way. So now it's like part of me. So for instance, I used to hear when I got on, well, people got on sales calls. Yeah, well, I was reading insert fake guru's name, and then I took insert fake guru's class. I used to hear that a lot. You know what, Jason? I don't hear it as much anymore.
Yeah, I believe that.
I think
that,
they're not being fooled by the baloney. I think they probably have watched a couple of videos from those people, read some excerpts, but I think back to the concept that the market is becoming smarter as it becomes more sophisticated, I think people are realizing there's different levels of information coming from different areas of expertise. And now the same person that has to choose, hey, out of 10 brokers, deals that they're bringing to market, which is the best one, right? Very nuanced, non-repeatable, sequential knowledge. Those same buyers are able to say, hey, here's 10 people sprouting off about what's happening in the marketplace, which one to believe. And I think they're getting smarter. And that's probably the biggest joy of 2026 is that in a more mature market, there's a bigger segment that have educated themselves broadly and can be helped, talked to, you know, serviced at the highest level, because each moment I have to challenge the way you think about a process that I've seen for 16 years, you've seen for 16 minutes. That's not as additive as like, let's game plan how to conquer this deal.
Well, and I think that's, it's come up several times on the podcast so far with various people, where, you know, I think to your point of what you're saying too, is that the buyer market is maturing. So they're in this life cycle where they're maturing as a group, but like, you know, they're getting better and better at it as being buyers. I think the challenge is the sellers are not getting better. And then the business brokerage community, because it's so disjointed, because there's no regulations, because there's no requirements really to be a business broker, it's not necessarily maturing as a whole, right? Maybe part of it, but not as a whole. So now what you have is buyers who are getting better at being buyers and sellers who are not good at being sellers, and brokers who might be outmatched as well. You know, as a group, there's some amazing ones out there, but I think there's a lot that struggle. And so it should be interesting, because it's not going to be a fair fight at the rate it's going.
I'm going to go back to a really frustrating couple hours I had last night, but you guys can tell this is personal for me. And I think about it way after hours. A part of me thinks the brokers are getting better, just at different things. So a buyer has to look at 1,000 deals and pick the best one. A broker who is trying to maximize the value of their seller's business. Let's not talk about any of the non-fiduciary, non-capitalist stuff, right? Steve selling a business, Johnny the broker's representing Johnny's role is to get maximum value, right, for the business. I think brokers are getting better at finding suckers, and that's their job. And as much as that may not be what my side wants, I'm not going to sit up here and lie about my understanding of the other side either, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's real. I think that sellers and brokers are actually getting way better at doing their job. But I think that we, for too long, allowed some concept of like kumbaya, let's hug at the campfire, doing deals because everybody tells the truth. That's bull swank, right? Buyers are tasked with doing due diligence, because if you are going to go raise $3 million and personally guarantee it, you should be smart enough to make that investment decision, right?
Yeah.
Sellers should be able to run a business for 30 years, sell it, and show it to 10,000 smart buyers and trust that the buyers are doing their diligence, right? Now, I know there's a lot of whack diligence going on, but I got to give it to the brokers and sellers, man. If I'm honest, I think they are getting better. They're getting better at doing their job.
Yeah.
Which we want to sit here and say great deals for both sides is all we want to talk about. But let's be honest, buyers getting businesses at way lower prices than market is a good thing for the buyer, not for the seller, right? Mm-hmm. And sellers selling businesses for way higher price than market to someone who didn't do their diligence is good for sellers and brokers. We have to accept those two outcomes as good for the buyers who are able to perpetrate them and the sellers and brokers, right? We just got to keep it real. I don't want to sit up here and lie to your audience. That's how I see it.
I mean, it's really the part of a fair market economy, where, you know, it's what people are paying and how it works, and you know, I think the game that's being played. So I love what you said about, you know, what you learned from last year, the provocative side and the marketing. I mean, I think really effective marketing and content is divisive, which is either you like me and appreciate it or you don't, in which means you're either a good fit that I can help with and a good fit for my audience and my tribe, or you're not, and that's okay as well. Bad marketing and content is too pleasant and all accepting, and that's just not how it works. So I think that's a great lesson from last year. And I think what you're talking about from the other side for this year coming up and all of that, you know, as far as like this year and what's going to be important, I think that's amazing. And I think that's a great place to end on our bonus episode. Any final thoughts? Anything before we conclude part two?
I really am just excited for 2026. Let's all get out here and make some money, do some good deals. And I know that feels like a charge that's just vanilla. No, I mean it. I think this opportunity to buy businesses, whether you're on the buy side or the sell side, is an amazingly awesome opportunity to create real wealth for both sides. Buyer cashes out on 30 years of work. Or seller crashes out on 30 years of hard work. Buyer gets to walk into a ready-made business. So let's hold each other to a high standard, brokers, sellers, buyers, QOE providers, and let's go have some fun this year.
I love it. I appreciate it. Elliot, thanks again for coming here for part two, coming back at a different date and time. I appreciate it so much. And for the audience tuning in, Elliot's links are going to be in the show notes. You can find him. LinkedIn, Twitter, now X, YouTube. His main website is guardiandudiligence.com. His email will also be in the show notes. Please make sure to follow him, reach out to him, get into his personalized, customized funnel, and he'll actually talk to you like a real person and try to actually help you. Elliot, once again, I appreciate all your time and energy and what you're doing with your superhero skills out there to, you know, help the market.
I'm flattered. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Yes. And for everyone else, appreciate you tuning in. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to share this. Make sure to give Elliot some love online as well and all of his links. And let's promote more of this out there and hopefully drown out the fake gurus and or the bad advice or just the no advice and make sure there's some positive stuff out there that's helping. Kind of like what Elliot said, where this education cycle where it's getting more mature. It's getting more mature because there's more good content out there and people are open to it. So just share this, get this out there. That would be a big deal. And again, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.